Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
Anarchy Gumbo is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com, the Liberty Radio Network, and No Agenda Global Radio. This is Mr. Michael Dean from the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Today we have a weird little treat. It is the Lost First Fiends episode. Basically, Neem and I have been doing the Freedom Fiends since July of 2011, but in probably March or April of 2010, right after we met Nima, I was still doing my podcast Radio Free Nestlandia with my wife. And we did an episode with Nima. It was either the first or second time we met him. He'd come over to the house. We'd shown him all the guns. We cooked him buffalo chili. And we put the mic in the middle of the room and just yakked. Now, this is me as a constitutionalist, not a market anarchist. I hadn't fully formed and emerged yet. It's embarrassingly statist, some of the things I say in here, and it doesn't represent me now in September 2012. So enjoy, and I'm going to put some little, every 10 minutes I'm going to have a disclaimer in case someone tunes in on one of the radio rebroadcasts and doesn't know what it is. All right, enjoy me being an embarrassing statist, Michael W. Dean being an embarrassing statist 2.5 years ago. Take care.
Warning. This podcast contains sparkling conversations of sex and guns. Some may find one or both of these subjects offensive. If you choose to proceed, please sit back and relax as Michael W. Dean and Deborah Jean Dean exercise their First and Second Amendment rights. Rock and roll, motherfucker.
Yeah, I don't do much sweet. Well, I guess I do. I do, can you try to find the tripod handle for the, it might be not in there, but, yeah, get closer.
I would do at least an EQ curve, and probably that's it for,
it sounds really good without that. All I do is, normalize it. What I do, the process is I trim the beginning and the end, because when I turn it on and off, you get a bump.
Click.
Sound, yeah. Click sound. I just trim that in and out. I actually generally record about 10 minutes, save it, and then start again, just because it might crash otherwise. But actually, I've recorded like 50 minutes at once, and it never crashed.
Right.
And then I just normalize it in SoundForge, which is,
That's what we use at the station.
It's a great program. You know what you can actually do with this, which I've done, is do double ender podcasts.
What are those?
Double ender is, I'm surprised you don't know it as a television term. Like, whenever someone wants to do a telephone interview with me or a Skype interview, I hate the way telephone interviews sound. They sound, you know, especially with headphones.
Horrible.
So I explain how to do a double ender and do a double ender with them. Basically, we talk on the phone, but I record.
You record on your end.
I record the sound in the room, and they record the sound in their room on something else.
Yeah.
And then they send me an MP3. You know, they should send me a wave, but actually, if they do it as a, like, 196 or higher, 256K MP3, it sounds okay.
In bigger markets with savvier sources, I'll probably start doing that.
Right.
But the thing about here is you just call people and they're so technologically not advanced.
Right.
You're just like, just talk on the phone. I'll record.
I've done podcasts with people that way that sound like we're both sitting in a recording studio. You know, it's, I mean, really, really good.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah. So we're, I'm sitting here rapping with, DJ's here. Hi, DJ.
Hello.
DJ's been conspicuously absent from our podcast lately because she's been working extra because somebody at her job was, somebody was out for a while.
Okay.
And they're coming back Monday, so you won't have to get up an hour.
I haven't confirmed that.
Really?
So I'm going in early Monday.
No.
Yeah.
Can't you call her and yell at her?
We think she's in Vegas.
You get overtime or you want salary?
Salary.
They take care of her.
But
it's okay, though.
I got a big bonus for this month, too. So.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And Nima's here. Nima V. How do you say your last name?
Vidotti.
Yeah. Nima's someone I've been doing music with. He's
Oh, tell a little about yourself.
Here, you can hold it.
I can hold it?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm holding the mic.
Hold the speaking stick. You know, sure. The Native Americans have a thing where when they do the tribal council, they have a speaking stick, and only one person can talk at a time. It's like a thing with feathers on it, and if you're holding the speaking stick, you get to talk. So sometimes we call that the speaking stick.
I think they were foreshadowing microphones. See, they knew ahead of time. Yeah. Basically, I'm Nima Vedati, also known as Nima V. I have a video out there on YouTube called I Own Me. I encourage you to check it out. I also got a MySpace page, MySpace/NimaV, if you want to check that out. I do libertarian hip-hop. I also do just good old southern hip-hop under DJ Subsonic. That's my DJ name. And so I'm here, and Michael's still not, so I guess I'll keep talking.
Oh, please. Our audience is used to his brief absences.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it's pretty laid back here.
Very.
I'm also a personality on our local ABC affiliate.
I know. He's a TV star.
I'm a TV
He's
personality.
A big fish in our small pond.
Exactly. Big fish in a small pond. I like it that way. Makes it easier to swim. More room to swim. Got it.
What's up, bitch? Bitch!
That's the display of affection between Michael and DJ there. The loving couple.
They're used to that more.
Yes.
Hi, baby.
Hello.
So, I guess we're podcasting. What are we podcasking about?
I don't know. What were we talking about when I said, we're so brilliant, we need to get this recorded?
I think, well, the last thing you were telling me is...
to own a gun.
Right, every honest man needs to own a gun, I think.
I think we're talking about guns for a change. Yeah, we don't talk about that
never.
Much, but...
You had showed me your .38 special, which was 12 ounces unloaded.
I know.
Felt so great in my hand. I would take one home right now if I had the money or something to trade you for it.
I wouldn't trade you for it, but I'd take you to where we got it and help you pick one out.
That'll work, too.
Although, if you had money and you're going to get a gun, I'd say go tomorrow to the gun show to get it because, you know, unpapered guns are
better
unpapered guns.
Yeah.
And the government doesn't know who has them. And when they start going door to door, they're going to probably use the lists that they get from the stores.
So if I buy a gun at a gun show, there's no record that I, Nima Vedati, own that gun.
It depends. It depends if the person's a private dealer. I mean, if they're just a person selling a gun or a dealer. A lot of liberal people would like to close what they call the gun show loophole. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a loophole. I think it's the Second Amendment. But
I think it's free enterprise.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah. You know, they're convinced that the war on drugs in Mexico is because of private gun show sales in Wyoming or something.
Instead of the illegality of drugs.
Yeah. And the
ease of buying firearms no matter where you are.
Well, the amusing thing about that theory is that most of the gun violence going on in Mexico right now is automatic weapons, machine guns, which are illegal. You can't buy them at a gun show here, you know, from a private sale. You can actually buy them at a gun show, but you need a permit from the BATFE to do it.
Tax stamp.
Machine guns, I don't have any desire to own any. They're incredibly expensive to own, to shoot, and you need a special permit that puts you on the radar of the government.
Right.
But it's the permit doesn't cost much, and if you live in Wyoming, you can actually probably get one. You know, I think it's like 50 or 100 bucks, and it takes like 3 months to get it. But
are there any classes of arms that are just... completely illicit? Like, could I have a tank or an RPG?
You could have a tank that doesn't do anything except drive.
Decommissioned.
Yeah, you
weapon.
Can't. Have,
they can't have a cannon.
You can't have a. No. You can have a cannon. It's a
well,
special
you can't
you
have a tank
it.
With an active.
No, you can't have a tank with a cannon. But there's actually, you know, this is kind of news. I think it's this weekend or next weekend. There's a charity event in town that's a machine gun and cannon shoot.
That's true. Yep.
You were asking if there was news. That's barely news here, but that's shocking to people in California, like, because you can't own either there.
Well, maybe I'll go do a story and post it up on the YouTube.
There you go.
There you go.
Let people see what we do here in Wyoming.
Yep.
Which is blow crap up.
Yep. Why not?
Yeah, you can't have... and, you know, there's actually, like, I argue with pure libertarians sometimes on that, because... a lot of people think everything should be legal. You know, basically, the idea of the Second Amendment is that you should be able to have what the government has, you know, to protect yourself from the government. You know, it's like, well, the government has RPGs and H-bombs. I should have RPGs and H-bombs. But it's like, I think it's ethical for any honest person to own a weapon that can be used for self-defense, which means can specifically target one person who's trying to hurt you. But machine guns are less discriminating than that, and explosive devices are completely undiscriminating, so I'm cool with them being illegal for the common man.
Well, what...
And RPGs. You know, it's like RPGs... There's... They can't really be used for self-defense against a specific person.
Well, that, I think that brings up an important question, and that question is part of the Second Amendment, part of the motivation was to protect against tyranny. And if we can't protect, I mean, there's no way somebody with just a gun or even just an arsenal of guns could protect themselves from the United States military. It's the biggest military in the history of the world.
Well, if you want to get technical, I mean, people with no technology in the Middle East are making life very difficult for
right.
the United States government. You know, they're people using, yeah, they have machine guns and RPGs, but they don't have much more than that. You know, right. they don't have tanks.
They don't have
airplanes. They don't have helicopters. Airplanes. They don't have. They might have night vision goggles, but it's like sixth generation Russian stuff from 15 years ago.
So what would if America tried to occupy itself? Or let me rephrase that. If Washington, D.C. tried to occupy...
Wyoming.
Is that how it would look, do you think? Or do you think American soldiers would fire on American citizens in America?
Some would. Some would refuse to.
I mean, we have the oath keepers out there. I almost called them oath keepers.
We have the oath keepers and then
we have the oath breakers. We do have the oath breakers as well.
Organized under that name.
Right.
But, well, there's actually a conspiracy theory I've heard, which is that the Obama administration is so adamant on putting through their agenda that they're not going to allow the possibility of midterm elections upsetting their balance, and they're going to suspend them under some emergency, and that's the reason that we have most of our military overseas right now, so they can't join in and help civilians in that instance.
You think they would join in and help civilians?
I think some would. I think that there are...
Well, that would be a civil war.
Well, it'd be a civil war, and it would be treason. But I think that there are some soldiers that would just not fucking go door-to-door and take guns away from U.S. citizens. I think there are a lot who would. I mean, in New Orleans, during Katrina,
right?
You know about that, the National Guard, and it was like a weird mix. It was like the National Guard, the Ohio State Police, and I don't know who it was.
But was there a tinge of racism in that? That was probably white soldiers and black civilians. What if it was people in Wyoming against people in Wyoming?
It wasn't just white civilians. I've seen footage of white people being dragged off in Katrina by the National Guard. It was anybody with a gun. Yeah, and there's a couple high-profile cases right now of people trying to get their guns back, and they're white. There's a white bar owner.
So their property still hasn't been returned to them?
Definitely.
Wow.
Yeah, it hasn't been returned to them, and the stuff that has been returned was not stored well. Like, some of it was destroyed by salt water, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, they were heinous about it.
And then, of course, there's no recourse for them. They have to go through some sort of court system.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, if you got $2,000 worth of guns taken away and you have to spend $5,000 on a lawyer, it's like
$15 or $25 to sue the U.S. government.
So you have to spend money because somebody else did something that should be illegal.
Right. And they didn't catalog them well or give people receipts or anything. They just took them. And they took them at gunpoint. They, like, came into people's houses and knocked them around and took them.
Well, I guess Rahm Emanuel wasn't around back then, but that sounds like the don't let any crisis go to waste kind of thing.
Well, you know, that's the theory of the midterm elections are going to be suspended. You know, somebody's going to do something somewhere, and they're going to,
But that's never happened before. Do you think it could? I mean, we've had a lot of unprecedented...
I don't think it's going to happen. I'm arguing against it. I don't think it's going to happen. That's too big a step, I think.
I don't know. I think that the right-wing gun nuts in this country have been actually very patient. I'm surprised more hasn't happened. And really, like, most of the violence in the past year has been left.
What do you mean?
It's been Democrats. You know, there was a guy in California at a tea party who got his finger bitten off, and it was a tea party guy, and he got his finger bit off by a Democrat protester.
Yeah.
There was
There was a couple other things.
It's like the media bias is weird too. Like the immigration thing in Arizona, you know, the people protesting against the law were like throwing bottles at the cops.
Wow.
And the mainstream media portrayed it as like, you know, mostly civil except for this. And then like tea parties where nothing gets thrown. They're like, they're on the verge of violence.
They make a mountain out of a molehill. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you believe like me and believe that governments are in essence violence and the Democrats are the party of big government, that makes them more violent, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's like when I was a kid, I didn't really get, I mean, I was Democrat until I got a gun.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a lazy, half-assed Democrat. I didn't care much about politics. I'm kind of ashamed to say that I voted for Feinstein at one point in my life when I lived in California. And I also, I'm ashamed to say that, I'm sorry, my wife's shuddering.
It's in the past. We can let it go.
Well, I was a Democrat when
we got married. I voted for Reagan.
Yeah.
You have more history.
Yeah.
Well, I was a Democrat, I think, until Nancy Pelosi became the House Speaker in 2006.
What did she do to you?
I guess that was... Well, yeah, she was just Nancy Pelosi.
There's a guy that's... The guy that's running against her seat is some guy that went up against the mob and successfully. And his motto, his unofficial motto is, he took on the mob, he'll take on Pelosi.
Right. Which they're almost one... They're just a different kind of mob, basically. Yeah.
Well, they're the legal mob that has the army behind them, so they're much more powerful than the mafia.
What Bastiat called the legalized plunder.
The mafia is, a bunch of idiots with handguns. The government is...
The governor has nuclear weapons.
The government has nuclear weapons. You get back to your question about, this state were invaded, which I think is a good example of this state. It could be, any state, but... I think this state is a good example to ask about because I think that this state is about 75% or more Republican and conservative Republican and anti what's going on right now in a big way.
Yeah.
And is one of the most armed states in the country.
Yeah.
And it's not so much libertarians with guns, it's deer hunters. And
it's people for whom guns are still a way part of life.
Yeah. It's I think if you went door to door on this block, actually I know for a fact because one of the guys that has lived on this block for a long time chats with me sometimes, and he said that there are maybe 3 houses on this block that don't have guns and all the rest do. And there's what, 12 houses on this block?
Mm-hmm.
Probably
not a lot of crime in this block then, is there?
There isn't. And there's actually like some kind of low income, druggy, crimey housing about 2 blocks away, but it just never wants to come up here for some reason.
Of course not.
Well, didn't neighbors say that at one point somebody did and
got a gun in their face?
Gun in their face?
Yeah, it was like poking around trying to get in someone's car or something.
Yeah.
But.
Deterrence.
Yeah, I mean. A deer rifle with a scope is a sniper rifle for deer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's they're it's funny because you always see these shows and like someone gets assassinated and the cops are always like, there's only 6 people on the East Coast that can make that shot, and it's like bullshit. Go down to Sportsman's Paradise and go in there any day of the week and there are probably 5 people in there that could make that shot.
Right.
Well, are we talking about the 2,500 yard or the 300 yard shot?
The 300 yard shot, there are tens of thousands of people in the country.
Exactly.
Or millions,
Yeah.
I mean, what are there, like 4 million deer hunters in America?
Yeah.
Something like that. And that's just deer hunters. There are probably 8 or 10 million people in this country who hunt every year or every other year. And to hunt, you have to be able to kill something man-sized at 200 or 300 yards.
Yeah.
So it's also in the, I don't know if you know this, but the Wyoming Constitution, or there's a law in Wyoming. Was it out of the Constitution? I know there's a law in Wyoming. I think Cale Case wrote the law. Huh? He was one of the co-sponsors on it. That nobody can take away the guns of Wyoming in time of emergency.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know
after,
that.
It was passed after Katrina.
Wow.
Disclaimer. This is a September 2012 rebroadcast of a spring 2010 Radio Free Nestlandia episode with Michael W. Dean, Nima Vedati, and Deborah Jean Dean. And it's Michael sounding really statist. And I've changed since then.
And then, of course, you have our Firearms Freedom Act sort of nullifying federal gun restrictions if the guns are made and kept here in the state. Since the feds always use the Interstate Commerce Act.
That's not enacted yet. It's passed, but it doesn't go in until June, is it?
Did the governor sign it? I think the governor signed it. Okay.
He signed it under duress, which is kind of... I'm amused by the way Wyoming lame duck Democrats work as opposed to the way they work elsewhere. Uh-huh. Elsewhere, it's like, you know, when you're out of office in 4 months,
you don't care and you're going to throw all your socialist stuff in there.
Yeah. Elsewhere, you try to pass as many nanny laws as you can. Here, the governor goes, well, I don't really like this anti-nanny law, but I'm out of here, so I'll sign it.
Not only that, he could have just not signed it, and it would have gone into effect anyway.
Yeah, he didn't have to take responsibility.
He could sign it, he could veto it, or leave it alone.
Yeah. I think July 1st is when the new laws come around, because I think that's when the anti-texting law comes into play.
Well, we have one of those?
We have one of those now, yeah. No texting while driving, unless you're a police officer or a fireman. Then it's okay.
Or Schwarzenegger. Wasn't it, they have an anti-phone bill, and Schwarzenegger's wife was caught
on the phone many times.
Yeah, and a bunch of parking violations, I think, as well.
I guess for me, I hate it when you blame things on people's actions. You blame people driving badly on their phone, which the phone is an inanimate object.
You know, that's the libertarian thing, too, and it's like, you know, I'm libertarian-leaning Republican, and I'm kind of like, you know, I'm kind of glad there are drunk driving laws. But you probably think there shouldn't be any, huh?
Well, see, that brings up an important question. I think if there were private roads, I'm sure some of them, or maybe even all of them, the market would play it out. Maybe all of them would have drunk driving laws.
You know, I never got around to a thought I didn't finish earlier when we were talking in my room was about private property. And I was talking about Boston Tea Party. He's a libertarian and a Christian, and he came up with, like, the best answer I've ever heard. It was about the, you know, having religious icons on public land. He's like, mm-hmm. How would you deal with that in your libertarian paradise? With some interview I said, and he mm-hmm. said, what public land?
Right, there shouldn't be. Yeah. There really shouldn't be any public. Yeah. So how do you define... Another example about public land that I love is in Riverton, at the Public Works Department, which I went to many times to go cover stories or just to go shoot B-roll, and they have this giant sign that says Public Works, and then under it on the fence is a sign that says No Public Access.
I like that.
Or I think there's a sign in a park somewhere, I think it's somewhere in the east that I read about, that says no glass bottles, no skateboarding, no basketball, no something else. And then at the end it says, remember, this is your park.
Yeah.
This is my park. Why can't I do what I want?
Remember that song when we were younger? Signs everywhere, signs blocking out the scenery, wrecking my mind. Do this, don't do that. Can't you read the sign? I think it's Paul Simon
it was a one-hit wonder.
Whoever it was, probably, you know, that sounds like a really libertarian protest, but the person is probably like, there ought to be a law about everything else. I think it was some California pop singer, and they're generally...
In that time, they would have been a flaming liberal.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's...
How did we get to where liberals used to be the anti-establishment, and now...
I don't know, man, but...
I have a theory.
That was one of the things that bugged me about William Ayers speaking here. I was just like, wait a minute. Because I remember... I'm a little young to remember him, but my sister... knew about SDS, you know, it was
Students for Democratic Society.
Uh-huh. Which was what the Weather Underground came. She had an SDS button when I was a kid. She came home from college and I was like 10. And I was like, what's SDS? And she told me about it. And like, that's why I know who William Ayers is. And like, you know, I mean, I was kind of, I read Steal This Book by Abby Hoffman when I was 12. You know, I was into, at least in a theoretical way, I was into the William Ayers idea when I was a kid. I was into the, like, overthrow the tyrannical Republican government and make it a leftist paradise for everybody. And now I'm like, They should have lined those people up and machine gunned them. I mean, really, I mean, I'm joking, but I'm like, I'm turning into my dad. But
well, it sort of goes to show you that it's not the people in power; it's the power structure itself, isn't it?
How did it happen?
How do we get here?
With all this, is that they found that they were not able to fight the system from without side.
Oh yeah, they couldn't blow it up. They just all became teachers and educators, and
they took their time and infiltrated the system.
Yep.
And I mean, I remember hearing teachers say, and I'm a little older than he is, you know, you can't work from outside the system. You have to work within the system. You have to vote. If you don't like the government, then vote in the one that you want. And people took it to heart, and now we have people like Pelosi and Obama, and, you know.
Well, as a libertarian, here's sort of my thing. It's fine. Have your socialist paradise, but I should be able to opt out of it.
Well, yeah, I totally agree. I think it should be state by state, and the state should vote to do it. But that basically comes down to secession without a gunshot, you know.
Right.
It comes down. But it's also, it's like, those states wouldn't be able to pay for their libertarian paradise because states, conservative states, tend to produce more solid goods like oil and
right.
uranium and coal.
So the socialist states would want to be subsidized right. by the more free market states, right. which is what we have now, basically.
Yeah.
Well, I guess,
I don't know that we're more free market states, but we're more producers of actual goods.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know? How much of the the vaunted stimulus package did Wyoming receive compared to...
I think we got that little one block that they're working on down here. There is a thing that says, this paid for by your 1 cent of voluntary county tax and the recovery.gov. And I'm like, okay, that's the only place in my life I've actually seen the stimulus, not on TV, but in action, is there's a sign two blocks down where they've had the street blocked off for about 3 weeks and haven't done anything, but that's what they did with it, I think.
Well, I mean, isn't... So basically, in the system we have now, for it to work, some people have to take from other people by force. Because the people who don't agree with it are going to have to subsidize the Californian socialist paradises that they disagree with. And where's the fairness in that?
There isn't.
There isn't.
I mean, that's libertarianism 101, is that, you know, it's not... Democracy isn't fair because 51% can tyrannize 49%.
Right.
You know, technically, if 51% of the country decided that wearing a brown shirt or wearing a green flannel was life in prison, well, they'd probably challenge that on cruel and unusual, but you know, a $50 fine for wearing a green shirt, they could do it.
Right.
That wouldn't make it right.
Right, exactly. But even then, even if they did say life in prison, then it's just up to the courts. And the courts is just another branch of the government. So there's no real people-motivated way to break free of that.
We are not a democracy. We are not run by the people.
You know, to answer your question, where did we go wrong, I agree totally with what you said, but I'd take it back even further. You know, I'd take it back to...
where did the liberals come from?
Okay, let's take it even further. No, let's take it progressively back. My dad's generation, you know, my dad's 88. He grew up in the Great Depression. He said, I'm going to make a better world for my children, and he did. And part of that was giving them anything they wanted, and that's part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Entitlement.
You know, I really do. I think that after World War II, all of a sudden, you know, there was more wealth and more prosperity in America, and everybody spoiled the fuck out of their kids. And I don't have a problem so much with the physical part of that, the, you know, give them nice things, but I have a problem with the let them have the world, which is what they did.
Right.
And I think that is what made that happen. The, you know, what that in the 50s is what
created
made the thing you're
the
talking about in the 60s.
Liberals in the 60s, which gave us the Clintons and the more current Democratic
government. I take it back to, you know, and then if you want to take it to the 1800s, I mean, that's the theoretical roots of communism.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there were a few different documents and books written in the late 1800s that kind of influenced the, you know, post-American Depression Woodrow Wilson
progressive era.
Well, a lot of that came from Europe, where they had rather repressive and structured classes. Mm-hmm. There's a reason, you know, that Russia went from the czars to communism.
If you live under the czars, communism is a good thing. It's something.
If you're
starving and being killed, a workers of the world unite paradise where everybody
sounds
can
like
have a bowl
thing.
Of soup mm-hmm. sounds fucking great.
Right.
And
what they forget, though, is that
it doesn't work.
Somebody is in power, yeah.
And
power
and I think what happened in the 60s, too, is that everybody, people who had more than they needed, looked at the world and said, it's not fair. We should do something for them. And for some reason, this idea came along of it's okay to steal from others to help others.
Right.
I mean, that's the basic problem.
Which, and libertarians have no problem with helping others. It's not like we think everybody should get money and keep it. We just don't think it should be forced. If you think it's not fair and you want to give people money, open up your checkbook and write a check.
Republicans don't have a problem with that either. A lot of people think Republicans and libertarians, you know, are mean.
Anti-charity.
Yeah.
No, not
no,
at all.
It's individual. Uh-huh. You know,
let the people decide the charity, yes. And it works so much better like that. Because if I write a $100 check directly to a homeless person, or if I get $100 taken out from taxes, he might get a dollar of that $100 that finally gets to him. Mm-hmm. You know, because the different bureaucrats along the line will take their cut. Whereas if I just give him $100 and say, "Hey, go out and buy food for a month," he's going to go do that.
Well, he might, or he might,
or he
not,
might buy
but
drugs.
He will,
but
he
either
will
way.
Get the his use of the $100 right. that you choose to give him.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I think that LSD really is the problem. I think that LSD makes people think everything should be groovy and free.
So that's the problem.
I disagree.
I never did acid. That's one
I
of the...
I disagree.
You disagree?
Yes. That was never the result that I
not
had.
Not for us. It made me picture being in the hospital emergency room covered in blood every time. I don't know why. It never came to that. But that was always the image that came in my head. But no, I think in the 60s it made everybody go, "Hey, man, it's all groovy. Everything should be free." And that's another thing is the word free, I think, really got perverted in the 60s. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know,
free
doesn't mean... you don't pay.
Right.
You know, freedom doesn't mean someone else pays.
Right.
And a lot of people think it does. I just think that there's a bunch... I mean, I really look at liberals as pussy fucking children. I mean, they're...
Oh, can we cuss on this?
Oh
I should have been cussing. Fucking, I should have been cussing the whole fucking time. Goddamn.
Who's going to stop us? That's the only advantage of podcasting is you can cuss.
I forget there's no FCC, thank God.
We've only got like 100 listeners on this podcast.
I just never cuss when I hold a mic. Unless I'm on a rap show.
Oh, that's right. Because it's like...
if I'm rapping, then...
You are used... Well, this is more journalistic than rapping in a way. It feels like an interview. So
yeah.
Here, let me save this and then start it over so it doesn't crash. It's been...
Let me take a piss.
30 minutes. Say, where were we? I was saying that liberals are a bunch of fucking pussies and act like children. I don't think kids should be smacked, but liberals make me want to smack them like bad kids.
Yeah. Children should definitely be spanked.
Spanked, yeah, but not beaten. I want to beat liberals. I'm not very libertarian sometimes. You know,
I don't know if you have to spank kids. I don't know. I'm not a parent, so I can't. And I'm a young kid, but...
Did you ever babysit?
I never babysitted, no. I have a little brother.
There's another problem.
And sisters.
You know, they say... the square people say, spare the rod and spoil the child. I think part of the problem is they stopped smacking kids in the 60s. Now it's like, you know, you can go to jail for it, spanking your child. But
then again, I mean, that's just using force. That's just being a government. If you're a parent and you smack your kid.
There's a difference between taking the kid out to the woodshed and blistering his butt with a belt and a...
Smacking him.
That 14-month-old kid that you go, "No, don't touch that."
You know,
slap him on the hand.
I'm not sure that all governments are bad. I mean, for instance, if I let our cats do what they want, they'd be dead.
Right.
You know, if I let Charlie do what she'd want, she'd run out in the road and get hit by a car.
Well,
that's on a small scale. I guess when I define a government, I mean something
on a larger scale.
Well, I think, you know, the name of this podcast is Radio Free Nestlandia. Have I explained that to you? Nestlandia is our nation of two.
There you go.
You are in Nestlandia right now. You are a visiting dignitary from Wyoming coming to Nestlandia.
Oh, I don't get my own.
Well, I was just going to say.
You have to tell us what your micronation is.
I have to make up a name for it,
Nimandia.
Nimandia, yeah.
Veland.
Nimunda. And then it'll be like that Eddie Murphy movie, Zamunda. What was that? Trading Places. No. Coming to America.
Trading Places, good. Coming to America, horrible.
The thing is about spanking, if I can just digress on this for a moment, is that what it does is it teaches a consequence to an action.
That's what happened in the 60s.
Yeah.
Consequences disappeared.
That's true.
Yeah.
You know, my dad said, there is no such thing as a right without a responsibility, mm-hmm. an attendant responsibility. If you're a little kid and you run in, you steal the cookies, and mom comes in and smacks you on the butt with a wooden spoon, it's like, okay, well, I have to weigh. Is getting smacked on the butt worth the cookie? Right. You know?
let me ask you this. Why do you think that there's a... Not to pick on hip hop, but I know it's celebrated in hip hop. But why do you think that there's a kind of culture of super criminal youth that there wasn't in America for a long time? I mean, there always was like a few of them here and there. Mm-hmm. But why do you think that there are so many young people who think the world owes them a living and they should just fucking take whatever they can?
Well, I mean, I think part of it is the arbitrariness of our system. To me, it seems like kids are taught to do things because somebody in authority says so. They're not taught morals. And that's probably
part of the problem.
That's
right
one of the
there.
Reasons I was hesitant about the spanking is because I believe in... I don't think kids these days have morals. Like, for instance, they'll put drug use in the same category as they would a robbery. And they'll think, oh, well, I'm breaking the law. I'm smoking this joint. I'm breaking the law.
Yeah.
Breaking the law is cool because weed is cool. And then they think, oh, well, robbing people's cool too.
Yeah.
Because it's all – no, but there's no distinction made in society for it anymore. We don't say, oh, it's wrong to take people's property. You know, that's wrong because it's just morally wrong.
I kind of like the 12 commandments, the 10 commandments. I'm not Christian, but it's like they are pretty much – except for a couple of them that are like moral, you know, they are pretty much the property rights.
Yeah. Rather than moral.
Well, the first six are the property laws, and the other four are God laws. You
right.
Know,
I mean,
don't
the
have
ones,
any graven images.
Right. The ones that aren't related directly to God, I mean, I think everybody can pretty much
agree
on.
Don't steal, don't kill,
don't lie.
Don't lie.
Don't covet your neighbor's goods or your neighbor's wife, I guess.
Is don't lie one of the Ten Commandments?
I think it's thou shalt not bear false witness or something
yeah.
like
okay,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it basically sets out the main morals. So, yeah.
And I think that a lot of religions have that. And I'm not religious, but one thing I like about living in Wyoming that actually can really irk you if you're libertarian, but in a way I kind of like it, is that it's so religious. I think it makes it a more moral place, mm-hmm. you know?
It seems like there's two schools of thought on that, though.
Yeah, there really are.
If you use religion as a learning tool to accent your morals, then yeah. But there are some people that...
Well, I think a lot of people here put being gay in the same category as manslaughter, which I kind of
right.
have a problem with.
Vis-a-vis the fence. Did you hear about the guy who spray-painted on his fence, gay equals death?
Yeah, but yeah. I still celebrate his right to do that because
of course.
It's a property right.
Yeah.
And in California, I mean, they would try to, like... It'd be a hate crime.
Right.
You know?
That's why it was such a bittersweet story to me, because I was like, well, that's not necessarily a good thing to say. No, I wish. I was so jealous.
Did someone paint over it?
I don't think so.
And then he painted it back? Or he painted it with a different...
What I liked about the story is...
Somebody in town painted, like, on their fence in front of their house.
Death, and then Leviticus, whatever the verse is. I forget what it is.
Chapter and verse.
Basically, the verse, I think, said, if you lay with a man as one lays with a woman, then...
It's an abomination.
Something about it's an abomination, and your own blood will be on, or you should be put to death, and your own blood will be on your head. Something
yes.
to that effect.
Yeah.
Which the city did said it's his own fence, it's his property, he can leave it. It's freedom of speech, which is all fair and good. And that's why I was bittersweet, because it's like, yeah, great blow for freedom. At the same time, not the most tolerant
thing. You can look it up, baby.
Oh,
you're going to dust off the Bible and look it up?
Dust off the Bible. And speaking of Bible, because I was talking about Bible earlier, I didn't realize this, but in hip-hop, there's an acronym for Bible. The Basic Instructions Before Leaving Earth. B-I-B-L-E. It's a Wu-Tang song. I never realized.
It sounds like it is. They're kind of spooky and spiritual. And
they are, yeah.
UFO-y and...
Oh, yeah, conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
The RZA, man. He knows something that we don't know.
Well,
maybe.
Disclaimer. This is a September 2012 rebroadcast of a spring 2010 Radio Free Nestlandia episode with Michael W. Dean, Nima Vedati, and Deborah Jean Dean. And it's Michael sounding really statist. And I've changed since then.
Yes.
Are we full up?
So, no. This could hold like 80 hours. You know, I mean, where did we go wrong? I'd take it back to the tar and feather tax collector thing. The, you know, right after the Revolutionary War, the what was the name of the rebellion?
Whiskey
Rebellion. Yeah, it's like after the American Revolutionary War, the new government, the new free American government needed to pay for it, mm-hmm. so they taxed whiskey. Mm. You know, right then, I think that they should have slaughtered the government. I think that's where we went wrong.
We should have had a French-type revolution.
Yeah.
I don't know. One of the things I've been trying to wrap my head around lately, there's a guy named Stéphane Molyneux, and he's from Canada. You'd think, oh, blazing socialist, right? But he's actually pretty... He calls himself a voluntarist. He puts it this way. He says, the smaller the government you have to start out with, the bigger it will get eventually, because the smaller the government, the freedom aspect of it builds the economy so much because you have free enterprise. So you build all this wealth, and then incrementally the people in power learn, oh, they can tax this wealth. And it just sort of feeds on
itself. So does he say we should start with a bigger government?
No, he says we should start with no government. But then maybe you have the same problem. Maybe you have no government, and then you...
Is no government not the definition of smallest it can be?
Yeah, well... Also, a lot of people I've met who call themselves anarchists are actually socialists. Nothing to do with him.
Right.
In my punk rock experience, you know, almost every kid I've ever met that has a Circle A anarchy symbol on his leather jacket is on food stamps, too. You know? And
really?
Yeah,
I guess I won't get it. Corporate basher.
And wants to throw bricks through the window of corporations does. Right. You know, it's like.
And bought the T-shirt at Hot Topic.
Hot Topic.
Well, that's later. But.
Well, to me, anarchy is a good thing if you think about it differently. And that's why a lot of people call themselves anarcho-capitalists.
Well, really, I mean, true anarchist is as far right as you can be on the left-right-only continuum.
That's why I don't like the left-right-only continuum. Yeah. People think they sort of meet back like it's a circle. They meet back on the other side. I don't buy that.
Well, if you like, you know, most libertarians use the left-right-up-down continuum.
Up-down, yeah. I gotta have the up-down.
I've invented politics in the fourth dimension, which is a sphere.
Oh. Fear, yeah.
A sphere. To show all the different points. Yes, okay. Not fear. A sphere.
You know, spherical.
Left-right is two-dimensional politics. You know, normal left-right politics where...
You add a Z-axis.
If you're into small government, you're also anti-abortion and anti-pot and anti, you know, like Republicans and Democrats. And that's one-dimensional politics.
Right.
Two-dimensional is the libertarian thing, the XY-axis.
Where you have the Y-axis is totalitarian at the top and anarchist at the bottom.
Now wait, would the left-right be one-dimensional or two-dimensional?
Left, right's one-dimensional.
Okay, so politics is the third dimension, which is a sphere.
Well, what's the extra axis?
Well, the extra axis is just all of the the little different things you can feel on different
anti-drug but pro-choice or something.
I mean, really, it's basically
call
because
it a moral axis.
Yeah, well, not necessarily.
Moral axis.
I wouldn't say that because abortion can. Some people would say it's a moral issue. Some people wouldn't. How do you feel about abortion?
I'm so torn on abortion. Abortion is one of those things that's so hard to pin down, because you know, as a libertarian, you believe everybody's person.
Is it the property rights of the woman or of the fetus?
Of the fetus, exactly. Because who deserves those property rights? I guess I've taken it to the point where I believe that because the baby's life is dependent on the woman sacrificing her property rights of her body. She has to contribute something from her own property.
that I guess if she chooses to not make that sacrifice, I mean, isn't that her choice then? Because she sort of builds the baby.
I'm not imposing my belief on this. I'm just asking a follow-up, like, devil's advocate question.
Go for it.
But isn't it murder?
It could be murder. I mean, well...
So stop right here.
It's hard.
Stop right here. This is what I mean by a sphere, the politics in third dimension. Okay. Because pretty much if you are if someone says they're libertarian, with most things, I can tell how they'd vote or choose or feel on pretty much most issues.
But there are some issues
except
like abortion.
Abortion.
Well, and neither one of you mentioned the father's property rights, because
of course,
he contributed
it's his seed, yeah.
Something. Yeah.
Is it a right of a child to have two parents, though? Because that seems like a positive
in
right.
California, they think it's a right for you to have two parents of the same sex.
Well,
I mean, that actually, yeah. Seriously, I think that there's a lot of people in California who think that that has more right than a heterosexual couple.
Really?
See, oh, yeah.
I don't know about a positive right like that. I mean,
I don't believe in positive rights.
I do think that you, as the world is today.
To explain positive rights, negative rights are things enumerated in the Constitution generally and what are considered natural rights, like you have the right not to be killed. Positive rights are things that liberals tend to be really into, like you have the right to a roof, or you have the right to a roof over your head or a steady job.
Right, or you have the right to steal money through taxation to pay for your health care.
So, sorry, you were saying?
Oh, but in society today,
maybe.
that children, it's less so now, but when I was a kid.
When I was your age.
Yeah, 50 years ago when I was a kid, if you didn't have, if you were a single parent family, the other kids are like, what do you mean you don't have a dad?
Or now it's the opposite. It's like, you have two parents? How weird.
Yeah, and I got some of that because I was one of the few kids I knew whose mother worked full-time at a career.
Yeah.
And my mother was as dedicated in her career as my father ever was. And so we had my great aunt lived with us and did a lot of the traditional mom-at-home type stuff with me. They're like, who's this old woman that, is that your grand... No, she's not my grandmother. She's my grandmother's sister.
Right.
Well, where's your mom?
Yeah.
Is your mom dead? No, she works. She what? It's like, okay, I feel strange. And, how come my mom isn't home having, cookies and punch for all my friends,
So to get back to the sphere thing... And that was a nice bunch of diversions, by the way. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Another thing I've heard about, generally libertarian theory says that all drugs should be legal. I mean, pretty much a lot of libertarians would say that outright.
Well, people
but there's an interesting... What?
Nothing.
There's an interesting argument I've heard on that that some libertarians say is that, libertarianism is all based on free will and... When you take a lot of drugs, you give up a lot of your free will, which makes you unable to make responsible decisions in society. And a lot of people blame, they say, oh, all the problems with drugs are because they're illegal. I don't think that's true. I've been addicted to heroin, and it was a bigger problem because it was illegal, but... I don't know. I don't know that I think that, pure libertarianism, like absolute libertarians often say, it should be legal to sell crack and machine guns to school children. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know. At some point, I think you have to I don't want 12-year-olds smoking crack and owning machine guns.
It's not responsible. The thing, my argument would be that they have a right to do whatever they want until it impacts someone else.
Exactly. So if you go try to pawn off your crack to somebody else's 12-year-old, wherein those parents would have more legitimate property rights. I mean, I don't know if you have property rights for a kid.
I think you do.
Yes, you do.
But those parents, you're invading their space there if you push those drugs on a kid. But to me, the whole idea that all drugs should be legal follows from one of the negative rights we should have had in the Constitution. I always tell people...
if the founding fathers could have imagined, because I don't think they could have imagined some of the tyranny that we see these days. And one of the things I don't think they imagined was the drug war. And I think that if they could have, they would have had an amendment in there, something to the effect of the freedom of ingestion, the freedom to choose what goes in your body. Because I think that follows from, you know, other sort of things. Like, you have the freedom to listen to whatever you want to listen to. You basically, we accept you have the freedom to read whatever you want to read. So those are just ways of internalizing something from the external world. And to me, drugs are the same way.
What about kiddie porn? That's a libertarian argument too. I've heard both ways.
Kiddie porn, maybe that has
an age of consent too. I've heard arguments on that too.
Right, right. Well, I mean, maybe age of consent should be determined by an individual parent. Yeah, and maybe kiddie porn. See, kiddie porn's weird because the act of filming the kiddie porn, I think, is where the real
harmful part, not the possession,
not the
of the
consuming
thing.
Of
well,
it. Well,
right. You know, if you look at the Libertarian Party website, they're basic. You know, they say that libertarianism can mean a lot of different things to a lot of people, but
most people
who call themselves libertarians agree on five things, and I know one of those five things is that nothing is illegal to possess.
Right.
Which, you know, part of I think that's a good idea is because it makes it impossible to plant something on somebody and falsely
accuse them of something.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I mean, like, owning a machine gun doesn't harm anybody. I choose not to own them because it's too many hoops to jump through, and they're fucking expensive, and they're fucking expensive to run.
Mm-hmm.
Turn money into noise. Yeah, that's what Boston says. But it's like, you know, if I owned one, it wouldn't harm anybody.
Right, exactly. You know? The mere act of trade or commerce does nothing but benefit society. If you use something you buy in an illegal way, then it's your use that's the illegal thing.
What do you think is going to happen with this Wyoming Firearms Freedom Act? I mean, really, it's just a piece of paper until it's tested.
I mean, yeah, totally.
You know,
and a lot of states have these, so we should.
Well, nobody's tested it successfully, right. Though. And the Wyoming one is different because it's the only one that any state has written, or is the first one any state wrote, that
or
allows
penalties
for, you know, throwing a Fed in prison.
Which is great. I love that.
Well, I think what's going to happen, though, is that if it's tested in that way, I'm afraid it's going to turn into a hostage exchange. You know, it's like, okay, say some guy in Wyoming decides to build silencers in his lathe on his barn, which under this should be legal.
Right.
There are a few things that are exempt. I think machine guns are, you know, I don't think it covers machine guns. Destructive devices, which is, you know, RPGs,
okay.
Or one other thing. But, it, you know, silencers are not on there. So, technically, under this law, you should be able to make a silencer in Wyoming, take it down to the swap meet, and sell it to your neighbor legally.
Right.
That is a violation of federal law, and it's a serious violation of federal law. It's like a few years in prison.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm.
Silencers? Yeah.
That's insane.
And silencers like machine guns, you can get a permit for. Mm-hmm. There's a store in town that sells silencers.
Right.
You know, there's stores in town where you can order a machine gun.
But you'd have to go jump through the necessary hoops and have the necessary paperwork.
And, you know, if anyone's killed with a silenced gun, they're going to come knock on your door. You know.
Right. And to me, that's just a permission slip. And I don't like permission slips for anything. I don't like registering my car.
Well, you know. The car, I don't either, but I think the car is more justifiable than the gun. Because the Second Amendment doesn't say anything about cars. Cars didn't exist.
Right.
And I guess guns are voluntary too, but they're really not. Because the Founding Fathers believed everyone should own one.
Right.
But, you know.
But they didn't. That would have been a positive, right?
The Founding Fathers also had slaves, which is really problematic for me. And the liberals always point at this when, you know, when you quote Jefferson.
Oh, well, he had slaves.
Yeah, he had slaves and he fucked them and had kids with them, too. But it's like.
I think when you quote Jefferson, though, you're quoting his ideals. I mean, you're not quoting.
Well, one of his ideals was slaves. You know.
But, I mean, nobody ever quotes. And I don't even know if Jefferson said anything about slavery. I've certainly never heard
I saw Colbert, who generally bugs the fuck out of me because he's so liberal, such a screaming liberal. But he's pretty funny sometimes.
Yeah, he is.
You know where he does the thing where he has, like, he talks and then over on the right there's text on the screen?
The point counterpoint thing, yeah.
He did one the other day where he's talking about, you know. He was pretending to agree with the Tea Partiers on some things, but really just slaying them. And one of them was like, you know, and it's all about state rights. And, you know, the Civil War wasn't really about slavery. It was about state rights. And over on the side it said, the rights for states to have slaves, you know, state rights for slavery. And it's like, yeah, that's pretty much what it was.
But that was their economic base. I'm not protecting slavery.
Lincoln, it's funny that Lincoln is such a hero. Lincoln was a racist motherfucker who he said blacks should never have the same rights. Mm-hmm. He said Negroes should never have the same rights.
He wanted to send them back to Africa.
Yeah, he freed the slaves to fuck over the South, basically.
Exactly. And that's to me what the Civil War was about, was a battle between the North and the South.
You know, and if you're a slave, you're probably like, I'll take it. You know, I don't care what his motivations are, I'll take it. But
I think that disagreeing with secession based on the Civil War is completely bunk, and I'll tell you why. Because there were many states in the North who wanted to secede or wanted to nullify certain things. They wanted to nullify the fact that people could... the government protected people who kidnapped runaway slaves, basically, and wanted to sell them back to their owners. And a lot of the northern states wanted to get out of the Union because
the North wanted to secede away from the South.
Because the South had slaves.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And if that would have happened...
I also wonder, too, if the South had won that war...
They would have gotten rid of slaves peacefully anyway, like every other society did.
I don't know. I wonder if there'd be... If the Union would have been strong to survive this long. I mean, I think it might... The fact that it didn't split up might be a good thing in some way. I mean, I just think about foreign armies coming in and taking over. It wouldn't have been as strong to defend itself, but who knows?
Well, the thing about it is government isn't legitimate unless it's based on the consent of the governed. And basically, what they did there was they went into the South and said, you're going to be part of our government by force. The North basically conquered the South through force. And since then, I don't think you can consider the South as being... They didn't enter into this union we have now legitimately. The South was conquered. You know, the South never... under our current system, the South never agreed to be part of this union.
And you know what? Part of the punishment that the South got for that was being the brunt of every joke ever since then.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book called The Redneck Manifesto by a guy named Jim Goad. Have you ever heard it?
No, I think I've heard that name.
I'd highly recommend it. He's a pretty funny guy. And a lot of people consider it a racist book, but I think it's more an anti-reverse racist book.
Okay. An anti-affirmative action kind of book?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And it's written like 15 years ago before it was all of that was such an issue as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... One of the basic premises of the book is that white people are the only race, the only group that it's okay to make fun of in the media anymore.
Yeah.
And that was kind of true then, but it's like really true now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the stuff that they'll say, you know, like if you think about like the archetype of like the hick, drunk, you know, wife beating redneck or whatever,
mm-hmm.
or any, you know, just
with the Confederate flag on the back of his Dukes of Hazzard car.
If you made like any of the jokes that are made commonly about different angles of looking at that archetype, if you made them about
black people or
any
Mexicans,
other group, you'd get your license pulled or kicked off the air or boycotted to high hell, you know?
Which is, you know, the liberals sort of think they're not being racist by dividing people into groups, but that is the essence of racism. If you say black people deserve different rights or Hispanics deserve different rights or they're special because they're Hispanic or black,
and most,
that's racism.
And most liberals are white but hate those whites.
Right.
You know, which is like...
Self-hating whites.
Yeah, self-hating whites, which is, I really think, how Obama got elected.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of it was minorities voting for him, but I really think it was predominantly white guilt.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like, I think his race has nothing to do with it. There are black guys I would have voted for in a second, and there are white guys that I'd hate as much as I hate Obama if they were doing what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Harry Reid,
Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, and
but then you have black people like
Mrs.
Walter
Clinton.
Williams. People like that. Or who's the other really great black libertarian? I forget his name.
Well, there's this singer guy whose music I don't like, Lloyd Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
He's at a lot of tea parties and he's on Fox News sometime. I like him. I really like this this Reverend Ken Blanchard guy,
mm-hmm.
who's a friend of mine.
I don't know him either. But I think as a libertarian, you want people to identify as individuals. You want people to say, I'm me. I'm blah, blah, blah. I'm Nima Vedadi. I don't want to say I'm a Iranian American necessarily. I mean, maybe that's part of me and I want to say that, but I don't want to say, oh, I believe in the same things that this group believes.
That is
believes
my
in.
Identity.
Right. I am me.
Yeah.
Just like I own me, you know?
Yes. We're Nestlandians.
You're Nestlandians, right.
But I actually put an American flag out front on days that it won't blow away, which isn't very often. But and it's like, I'm kind of surprised I am, because that most of my life I would have hated the idea of that, or I would have done it ironically. And it's like, I put it up now, and it's hard to say what it really means to me, but I think it's being patriotic for the original ideas.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's really like, that those two flags mean as much, if not more, to me.
He's pointing at a "Don't Tread on Me" and a Wyoming flag, right?
Yeah,
now.
And it's like
the Naval Jack,
yeah,
version, because of I like the stripes,
me. Yeah, the snaky flag. But you know, I mean, if we eventually, I'll probably hang them all out there. Although I really think that hanging a "Don't Tread on Me" sign in front of your house
cause too much
cause
attention.
Problems.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, and
well,
it's
not in Wyoming where you can paint you gays equals
yeah.
death.
Disclaimer: this is a September 2012 rebroadcast of a spring 2010 Radio Free Nestlandia episode with Michael W. Dean, Nima Vedadi, and Deborah Jean Dean. And it's Michael sounding really statist, and I've changed since then.
Yeah,
your fence.
Well, I think having
there's
a Wyoming flag
down the street from us that flies a Gadsden flag.
Really?
Yeah, on a pole.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Why haven't you pointed this out to me?
It's not often up, but again, you know, doesn't want to blow yeah. away.
Part of it to me, too, is, like you said, you're putting the flag up there for the idea of America, not necessarily the institution. I think, and that goes back to the Civil War to me. You know, people say, oh, well, Lincoln kept the Union strong. Well, the Union for what? Just for the sake of a union? I mean, what's the... There's no point to that. There's no idea behind it. There's no... Other
well,
than,
there's
other
strength
than the
in numbers, too. There's strength in numbers. And it's like, really, put it this way, like the original 13 colonies had strength in numbers, and I don't think any of those 13 could have made it on their own.
Maybe that's true, but that still needs to be a voluntary decision, and it shouldn't be based on keeping an institution alive, because I feel like sometimes institutions, they take on a life of their own, and I think that's where we're at. We're at the point where the government just feeds on itself, and it just wants to. It's become an. It's like Skynet.
It exists for its own benefit.
Oh, for its
like
own benefit.
It's like an amoeba or a cancer,
right?
Know,
whereas
like
originally,
virus.
The American Constitution set up this idea, this system that we would have for its usefulness. Whereas now, there's no thought of its actual usefulness. Just for the sake of itself.
Yes, the usefulness was about killing Indians and taking their land. I mean, really, if you want to, you know, it's
yeah,
like,
I guess that's true.
One problem with libertarianism, you know, being based all on property rights is almost all property on the earth was forcefully taken from somebody at some point in history.
Right.
You know, where we're sitting right now was Native American 120 years ago.
Right. And I think that libertarians deal with that in a special way. I think a lot of like Stephen Kinsella has said, I don't know if it's him, but somebody along those lines has said, you know, well, if a Native American came up to you on your land and said, well, I have this deed or I have this proof that this land was forcibly taken, then you have to go back. And there are lawyers that do that can go back. Maybe whoever has the original claim where before it became delegitimized, you know, they actually have that legitimate claim there. So, but the thing is, there's not a lot of that. There's not a lot of Indians out there who have those kind of records. So, you know,
because they're too drunk.
And the thing is,
and that's
that,
kind of true. It's like you know,
they didn't own the land. They
didn't have a concept of ownership.
Well, yeah, that's not necessarily true. And a lot of people think, oh, well, Native Americans were just these environmentalists and they didn't believe in ownership. But different tribes would assign families hunting rights on a specific area of land.
Oh, tribes killed the fuck out of each other before white man ever showed up in this continent.
Well, they did, but within the tribe, they would have property rights. You would have a family that said, oh, well, this 40-acre area, I doubt it was 40 acres.
40,000.
This area of land is yours. You hunt on it. Because they realized that if they opened it up and had this...
Everybody
would
pick the best spot.
What you would call, what liberals call the public good... Then people would go out there and they just take and take and take and they'd kill off all the antelope. But if you said, well, this is yours to be the steward of, then those people would only hunt enough for to survive, and they would let the antelope or whatever livestock.
See, I think where we went wrong, going back to that question, which may be the name of this episode, where did America go wrong? I think it was Pete Seeger and the song "This Land Is Your Land, This Land Is My Land" from California, fucking socialist. You know the song?
Sure, that, yeah.
To New York Island.
I never realized that.
He was a communist.
And
I mean, literally, like, member of the Communist Party.
He was a union organizer.
Well, yeah. He was a community organizer with the unions, yeah.
Well, the Pledge of Allegiance that we say at baseball games or before town hall meetings, that was invented by a socialist, too.
Really?
And he actually, before it was the...
Wait, the what?
The Pledge of Allegiance.
Really?
And before it was the put your hand over your heart, it actually, what you were supposed to do was salute it like Hitler. This was before World War II. And the way this guy had it envisioned was you would raise your hand basically like the Nazis did.
Were the wording the same? Was the wording the same?
I think the wording was the same.
Yeah, it not is sure. Morphed slightly, but not much.
You know, Indians, Native Americans, I think are the most fucked group in America. I think that black people should thank us for stealing them from Africa by force, which is, you know, I'd be taken out and shot for saying that. I probably will for saying that on here. But compared to Indians, okay, whose life is better and whose life is worse from 300 years ago? You know,
I think if you look at all the problems that both Indians and black people have nowadays are all because of government intrusions that
black
had
people's
the good
lives in America, like, poor black people in America are much better off than their ancestors in Africa are now.
Yeah, that's true. But I think the things that...
I think Native Americans are worse off than before we showed up.
Yeah, that's true. But I think in both cases, like with the... I think it's just the Indians who've decided to stay on the reservations that are worse off. I think a lot of the Indians got out of that and they've, you know, mixed their blood. Now they're not even really Indians anymore. You know, they've just sort of assimilated and they've just become part of what it means to be American. But the ones who stayed on the reservation... I think they have all those problems of basically 60% of their money comes from different governments. You know, I think in Wyoming, on the Wind River Reservation, 30% comes from the state, 33% or so comes from the feds.
Do you know about the gangster meth takeover of the Wind River Reservation?
I've heard rumblings of
it. I don't know if it's still going on as bad as it was a few years ago, but it was like Mexican nationals came in and hooked up with some of the women and moved in with them and started dealing meth and systematically took it over for a while.
Wow.
I mean, to the point where, like, they were running it. You know, it was a small bunch of Mexican gangsters took it over with meth and sex, basically.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Tom probably came in and said, hey, we're Indians too. We're just Aztec, Toltec.
Right.
Well, in Southern California, angry, entitled Hispanics who want a handout from the government are always fond of saying, this used to be Mexico.
Uh-huh,
it was Mexico for 2 years. They didn't hold on to it very well.
It was Spain before that.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah, well, exactly.
And it wasn't all of California. It was like, mm-hmm. not even L.A., was it? It was like below, was it San Diego and was it L.A.?
Well, yeah. I think Fremont got up to the Bay Area, maybe.
Well, we're at 22 minutes, which is going to make this... I think we should wrap this up in 5 or 10 minutes.
Okay.
If you can think of a place to take it.
Well, I wanted to continue a little bit longer on... We were talking about Indians and blacks. And I think that the problems... The reason why we still consider them different groups... is because of the government. I mean, the Indians are so dependent on the government and the reservations that it has completely changed their society and degraded it. You know, sort of the way the Soviet system has sort of ruined a lot of the Russian culture over there. And I think the same thing has happened to the Indians here. And I think blacks too. And I think the government programs hurt blacks. The welfare system hurts blacks. The drug war hurts blacks. The minimum wage... of all things. The minimum wage completely prices a lot of black people out of the job system. You know, and liberals think, oh, well, all these great things, all these handouts will help you. But what they do is they just degrade whatever society that they're trying to help. And would you guys agree with that?
Absolutely.
To an extent, I mean, I'm against the minimum wage. I wonder about things that wouldn't have happened without a government. I mean, in a way, I kind of feel like the government... in this country did good up until very recently and should gracefully step out of the way now and let the private industry take over it.
But can that happen? And
you know, it's like, would I don't know. I don't know if things would. Well, that's another question, and maybe that's what we should finish with. Was yeah, this is a lot of talk, but what are you going to do about it? Really, is kind of my final closing question. But you know, would the Tennessee Valley have come in and wired the whole that part? You know, would there be electricity and roads
if it was
just the private market?
Well, if it was profitable, then there would have been, and if not, then there's no need for it. Is sort of my answer for that. If without a government, it wouldn't have been created, then it didn't need to exist.
Your dad said the only thing the government should do: international treaties, interstate highways, and.
Well,
what's his other? There's three things.
The national defense.
Yeah, and protecting the borders,
roads,
yeah.
And
I mean, really, what a government should do is only do what can't be done well. I mean, there's not much a government could do. I mean, really, it could be argued that it shouldn't even do those things. But
right.
National defense. I think that that's something a government should do, protecting the borders proactively, not going over and blowing things up, but,
right.
You know, if attacked or... And then that gets into whole, like, libertarian... Like, that's another one of the gray areas of... libertarians have different theories mm-hmm. on the sphere
of, course.
Of, like, you know, defense. Some are completely against it. Some are for it. Some think there should be no standing army, but a raisable militia. Some think, you know... We should fucking drop a H-bomb on the Middle East right now and just get it over with, which you might have issues with.
I definitely have issues with it. Not just because I'm Middle Eastern. I would have issues if we wanted to drop a bomb on Africa or Europe or...
Oh, do it all.
Or kill everybody, so just
kill
us.
Kill all and let God sort them out.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, that was... Actually, Barry Goldwater came up with the phrase, bomb them back to the Stone Age. And it was... He wanted to bomb the fuck out of Vietnam... To end the war as a peaceful thing.
Wasn't as a peaceful thing. His issue was that are we fighting a war? Then let's fight it like a war.
Mm-hmm.
If we're not fighting a war, then we shouldn't be there.
Right, but we're always in this half-assed war,
yeah.
Like we are in the Middle East now.
Yes.
Which my answer... If you had to choose between the half-assed war and total war or no war, I would choose no war. But, of course, that's a situation where we're over somewhere else. You know, if there was an enemy at our border, if there were people in our streets that were enemies, then that would be a different situation.
There is an enemy at our border. You know, the drug war of Mexico is spilling over. I mean, I'm not against being more proactive with what's going on down there, you know, Texas, Arizona.
Well, the thing is, I don't think you can solve... That the drug problem with violence. Without legalizing drugs, yeah. There's no way to solve it. I mean, if we want a war there, then they'll make it a war. And there's no way to stop that flow of money because people will never stop doing drugs.
Yeah.
People will never stop doing drugs ever.
Right. Yeah, never. And right now, they're like going after the poppies in the Middle East. It's like,
well, you know, look, we tried to control alcohol.
Exactly.
Prohibition. And it failed miserably. What we're doing the same thing.
That was
kind of
one of the first heavy daddy state laws too.
Prohibition, yeah. Yeah.
We're doing the same thing with drugs and we just won't admit that it won't work.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people make money on it.
Yeah, it's a, you know,
I go to court to cover court stories sometimes. I don't work the morning shift, so I get out of it most of the time, thank God.
You're gonna run into each other at court at some point.
But
she goes to court her job.
When I'm at court, I notice half of the people there are there for nonviolent drug crimes, and they all get levied a giant fee, and there's a judge there that's working it, of course, and there's bailiffs that are working it too, and all those people's paycheck depends.
Yeah.
On this drug war.
And it's like, why, it's funny to me because I've lived in California and Wyoming, and it's like the drug and gun laws
are
completely
switched.
Reversed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like in California, this would get me a year in prison. Here, it's completely legal.
Yeah.
Here, a joint will get you a year in prison, and it won't get, it's not completely legal in California, but it might as well be, and in a lot of situations, cops would just fucking stomp it out and
right.
walk away and not even write you a ticket.
Right.
You know, and
that boggles.
Yeah,
it boggles my mind as a libertarian because to me, It's the same. It's the same thing. Yeah. It's the same thing. It's the government making a decision where it is not warranted for it to make a decision.
Yeah. What, you know, if somebody harms someone else because of either guns or drugs, then you deal with the harm.
The harm. Harm. Exactly. It's like
the harm.
Right. It, you know, they say guns don't kill people. Well, I don't think drugs ruin families. Drug addicts might ruin families, but it's their own actions that are doing it. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, is like with texting with driving, I think humans are so diverse and so unique and have such amazing capacities for even retarded stuff. And, you know, if you have people that can drive in a circle or drive on an indie track 200 miles an hour and not die, then you can have people that drive down the road and text and not die or not harm somebody else. You know, it's possible for somebody to be able to do that.
I can picture talking on the... I don't text. I think I've sent 2 texts in my life. Do you text?
I text, yeah. And I text while I drive.
You're under 30, so...
I'm under 30. I text while I drive, but I text... I'll type it in at the stoplight.
I can't imagine texting while I drive, and I frequently have talked on a cell phone while driving.
Right. But, I mean, it's...
Without a headset.
It's like anything else you do while you're driving. You do it when you're stopped at the stoplight, or when you're at the stop sign, or when there's a straightaway, and you're just focusing on nothing, basically. Yeah. There are ways to do it that you can do it right. And I don't think we should have a kindergarten mentality because some people are bad at something that nobody gets to do it.
Yeah.
It should all be on an individual basis. Yeah. In my more status days, before I was a libertarian, I used to think that there should be different levels of driver's license based on your skill. There should be like an A rating and a C rating, and old people get worse ratings and they get to do less stuff. They're allowed less freedom. I don't believe in that now because I don't think there should be any system. But I think the idea behind it, even back then, was that different strokes for different folks. And I think DC makes all these rules that are sort of one size fits all, and it's not the way society is.
There is a concept in the law that I really love, and it's called assumption of the risk.
Mm-hmm.
And this nanny stating is taking away and eating at assumption of the risk.
Right.
It's yours or mine?
It's not mine.
It's yours.
Where did it come from?
You had it.
You
know, you go to a hockey game, you get hit by a puck.
That's your own fault.
No, you sue them because they're out of the law.
You can't because hockey is an inherent consequence.
Right.
You know, what are they going to do? Start playing hockey under a plexiglass dome?
Okay, I think we're pretty much agreed on the bullet points of all of this. My question is...
You always want to conclude things. There isn't a conclusion.
My conclusion is... All right, well, we could go on, like, side things and come back.
Well, I want to hear the question. What's the final question?
Well, there's a question I didn't ask, which is, why did Hitler use the word Aryan when that means Iranian?
Well,
I don't understand that. As an
Iranian, the way I come to terms with that is the Iranians believe the Aryans started as an Indo-European race in Europe. And in fact, the language Farsi, which is spoken in Iran, is an Indo-European language.
Do you speak Farsi?
I speak a little bit. I can read and write it. I don't have very good conversation skills. I took classes in college, but I don't have anybody to speak Farsi with in Wyoming. You know?
Does anyone speak Farsi in Wyoming?
I've never met one other Iranian in Wyoming. I'm the only one I've met. I guess I've never met myself.
Group. There's probably two more.
Right? Probably. There could be two more.
Yeah.
But basically, the way it works is people think the Aryans were a race that started in Europe. And the Germans believed, you know, they were the part of the Aryans that stayed in Europe. And then the Iranians believed the Aryans made their way, traveled to Iran. They also made a settlement in Iran. That's sort of where the Persian Empire comes from. But actually, if you look at it, Indian, like the subcontinent, India, also has relations to Aryans. And we believe that sort of after the Aryans, a group of Aryans left Iran and then moved even more eastward to India. And that's where you get that culture from. Because I think Indian is also that's why they call it Indo-European, right? It's the gamut between Europe and India. So that's, I guess, why Hitler called themselves Aryans. But again, Iran means land of the Aryans. That's what it literally means.
So was he wrong? Wait, does he say that? Is he saying that Germany was the cradle of civilization and it spread?
I guess if he considers Aryans the main civilization, then yeah, Europe or Germany would be the cradle of the Aryans. And if he considers Aryans the masters of civilization, then yeah.
Are there any a lot of what Hitler Iranians?
No, you'll find some reddish-haired or in lighter-skinned people in like Azerbaijan and some of the little border towns, you know, or border countries. But I don't think I've ever met a blonde, blue-eyed Iranian.
Did you hear that Iran was quietly this week was quietly added to the UN's Council on Relations of Women?
Oh, really? No, I didn't hear that.
For some strange reason.
I did not hear that.
That's, you know, one thing that a lot of liberals in America that are really pro-Islam or pro, like, acceptance of... Uh-huh. The funny thing is like, the horrid treatment of women, mm-hmm. that people who are, like, absolute feminists...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They won't say anything about it.
Right. Well, I mean, as a libertarian, the way I see it is... I don't believe in the government of Iran. I don't believe in the Islamic Republic of Iran. I think they're just as illegitimate and have just as many problems as other governments.
It's the property right of the husbands to do that.
No, of course not. Well, the thing is, with religion, religion is voluntary. And if you become a member of a religion, you can voluntarily pay. You can pay the tithe. I don't consider tithing theft. I consider taxation theft. But tithing is voluntary. You can become excommunicated. If you're like, oh, I don't like where these tithes are going, you can choose to stop paying them. And same with religion.
Religion isn't voluntary.
Right. But I don't agree with that, because then it's usually a government that has to be there to enforce the religion. The government says, oh, well, it's okay for the clerics to stone the women to death.
Well, here's...
Disclaimer. This is a September 2012 rebroadcast of a spring 2010 Radio Free Nestlandia episode with Michael W. Dean, Nima Vedati, and Deborah Jean Dean. And it's Michael sounding really statist. And I've changed since then.
That's why the freedom of religion, the separation of church and state in America exists. But I think it's actually... perverted. I hate to use that word, but corrupted. I don't think that it's a violation of that to have a Christian icon on public land, mm-hmm. or in a school,
right?
Or say One Nation Under God,
right? You
know, especially when the nation was founded with those principles,
right? But, that's true. And again, that's also, to me, that's sort of property rights, and that's where the public school
I think public schools should be. Okay, you were saying there shouldn't be a minimum wage. I agree. I think that public schools are the most heinous thing.
Oh yeah, maybe that. I think that's one of the ways we were talking about where America went wrong. I think the public schools are basically where America went wrong. That's because they don't, they've gone away. They don't really teach things anymore other than indoctrination.
Right.
I mean, they just teach
and it's
obedience.
It's really gotten bad and left-wing, especially lately. Mm-hmm. But when I was a kid, it was indoctrination-y, but it was just kind of right-wing. But it wasn't really so much right or left-wing. It was the government overall.
Yeah. You
know? It was really, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
And so, yeah, exactly. These kids, and basically...
These kids today.
Well, if you look at the way public schools are set up, they're set up like prisons.
Yeah.
You know, and you're forced to be there. Yeah. And there are cops there. And there are rules that you have to follow just for the sake of the rules. I was the top of my class in high school, 7th. I was class president. And I would still have to go to ISS and stuff like that for not wearing a belt. When I was a freshman, if you didn't wear a belt, they would throw you in this thing called ISS, which is like a mini jail inside of the school. You know, for no other reason than you broke the rule. They never taught us morality, but they would teach us obedience.
I went to an all-boys Episcopal boarding school. Talk about rules.
Yeah.
I got kicked out.
Did you?
I got kicked out for calling the headmaster a fat, bald, overtly Christian old fart. Between 11th and 12th grade.
Nice.
I was home.
Yeah.
They found a letter.
But then again, on the other side of the coin... I think noticing the fascism, the mini fascism inside my school is sort of what made me so anti-authoritarian. Oh,
yeah. Well, that's why I liked the, you know, William Ayers, Abby Hoffman thing when I was a kid, because, and like, the band Dead Kennedys were a big influence on me. You know, the Abby Hoffman thing when I was 13 and Dead Kennedys when I was 18 or 19, punk rock, it was like, punk rock was the first thing that taught me that the government may not be your best friend. Well, mm-hmm. actually, it was Abby Hoffman. But then really, like, I got an education listening to Dead Kennedys.
Yeah.
And I still love the music, but now I have problems listening to them because it's really leftist socialist. You know, mm-hmm. Jello Biafra ran for mayor of San Francisco, and one of his platforms was a maximum wage.
a maximum wage. Heinous. Yeah, that is completely heinous.
And but actually, Obama made a joke the other day about
quote unquote joke.
He said something about, you know, he was talking about reform of Wall Street, and he's like, well, you know, at some point, I think maybe you've made enough money, and but you know, blah 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 blah. And I'm like thinking, okay, you made $5 million last year on your book, but you know, what's the point? Where I don't know, but anyway.
So here to wrap up. As a young Iranian American, what are you going to do about it? No. What are you going to do about it? It's fine to say the government's bad and there shouldn't be a minimum wage and there shouldn't be a public school system and pot should be legal and blah, blah, blah. And I agree with all of that. But hey, what the fuck are you going to do about it? It ain't legal and there is a government.
Well, I have to say that even the most...
What's your plan?
Even the most totalitarian of governments always rest on the consent of the governed. Whether or not... No matter how totalitarian they are. And so I think the main thing is first you have to educate people. You have to do podcasts like this. You have to not go with the flow at dinner parties. You have to bring up the important questions and ask the right questions. And then maybe things change gradually from there. I doubt it. But basically, people just need to learn about freedom. They need to learn what freedom is. They need to learn...
Yes, we need to send them off to camps at gunpoint where they'll learn what freedom is. I agree.
Of course.
Good camps?
Well, that's the other thing, is at the same time, we have to make sure we're taking the moral high ground and not forcing these beliefs on people, but persuading them. It's not even a fine line. It's a giant wall of a border between persuasion and force.
Or not even persuasion, but giving them the opportunity to be exposed.
Sure. Just bringing the message. And they will probably... I mean, if you... I don't know how you can be a morally consistent person and not believe in freedom, basically. And if you give people the education they need through podcasts like this, through music... through journalism, through your websites, and that's one of the reasons I say the internet is going to save the world, because there's such a plethora of information, both bad and good. But I think in the if you have a free market of ideas like you have on the internet...
Well, it's definitely very democratic in a way that I always wanted things to be when I was younger,
right.
And it really wasn't. And it's like... You know,
I wouldn't even use the word democratic. I would use the word it's completely laissez-faire.
Yeah.
It's completely free. You can say whatever you want. There's no regulation.
The current government wants to do some things about that, too.
If they're able to restrict the internet, actually not just through statutes, but if they physically can prevent all the loopholes in the internet, if they can physically prevent the internet from being free, then maybe we've lost.
Well, I've got an idea to prevent that, but I need someone with a little bit of computer programming skills. If there's any out there, drop me an email.
Well, I'm sure there are ways around it. That's the other thing. I don't know if the government has the power to shut down.
I have
down
a very
internet.
Simple idea. What they do have the power to do is the U.S. government controls the ICANN, I-C-A-N-N, which is the database that controls domain registration names. You know, so it's basically what it does is it turns a domain name into an IP address, which... Mm-hmm. They could make it so all domain names or select domain names didn't resolve. So, like, you know, if you typed in libertarianpunk.com, it wouldn't go to the server that has the files on it. But they couldn't really make it so if you type those numbers in, it wouldn't go there.
Okay.
What I want to do is just get someone who knows a little bit of programming to make a plug-in for different browsers.
To circumvent that?
That bookmarks both. You know, so when you bookmark your favorite site, it also bookmarks the IP address.
Right. So then you would have a more direct line.
Yeah, so if they took certain or all, it would probably be certain. It would probably be the ones they don't like. If they took them offline, you'd be able to get to your favorite sites through the bookmark you already have. Which would go to the IP address. I want someone to do that. Mm-hmm. That's really fucking simple, and somebody should do it.
Well, it sounds like in any plan of action that any freedom lovers make, either that or some other way of getting around it, or even some way of maybe getting that government-controlled IP thing into private hands, and so where it's not controlled
never
by the
happen.
Government. It'll never happen.
Never happen.
Well, then,
because
the
United States government invented the internet. I don't know if you know that or not, but the Army. Did you know that?
I knew, yeah.
The Army invented the internet.
Right.
So they, from the beginning, controlled where it went. Which, hey, why shouldn't they? They invented it.
It's their property. Do governments have property rights?
I don't think they do, because it's all about... There's a difference between copying and theft.
Put it this way. My plan is more possible than your plan.
Okay.
It's more possible that some I'm going to convince some programmer to do this, then we're going to convince the government to hand over that database.
Completely. But either way, I think preserving the internet is a first step in any plan of action. Because that will pervert... It's all about the battle of ideas.
And well, another thing is, too, they're trying to take it over in a way, they failed recently, was trying to pass the net neutrality law, which... Every kid who uses the internet is in favor of because it sounds great, but it's really not. What it is, the net neutrality, do you know what it is?
I've heard of it. I don't know.
It's basically the idea that no internet service provider would be able to charge more for certain types of traffic or charge for using a lot more traffic or charge for or be able to stop certain types of traffic. And, you know, everybody on the internet, every kid is like, that's horrible. This law should be passed. There ought to be a law. Everything should be free. Basically, what it's saying is, you know, I should be able to, I should be able to use all your electricity and not pay for it all. Yeah. And, you know, it's like,
ridiculous.
Like, basically,
this
what
is where I first started
getting me to be conservative.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or libertarian.
Yeah, he was espousing net totally neutrality.
I was like, you're like, what? Like, you didn't really understand the technology of it, but once I explained it in a very layman's way, you went, you should pay for what you use, basically, is what you said.
Like, and with everything. There should be no free lunch.
Yeah. And if the net neutrality thing passed, it would open up for more government control, actually, rather than, you know, a lot of it is... For some, they think that the internet, the government, the current administration thinks the internet is a positive right, and they think it's important that people in rural Wyoming be able to look at, you know, everything on the internet and buy things, and it's kind of become really mainstream in a way where it used to be kind of this free Wild West, and now it's, I mean, like now there's like a cyber czar to protect us, and
Well, think about how. That's sort of the problem with positive rights. I mean, nobody would have ever thought of a positive right for the internet before it existed.
But if you know what's a weird thing is, like, I never really thought about, like, the need for security protection of the internet, other than, like, I have an antivirus program. But it's like two things. Last week we watched that Bruce Willis movie, what's it called? About the cyber terrorists.
Oh, it's, I think, the fourth Die Hard.
Yeah. You ever see it?
Isn't the subtitle "Live Free or Die"?
Yeah.
Does it stand up to its freedom subtitle or no?
I don't know. It's the government is always sort of the hero in those movies.
Right.
I mean, he's a cop and he's doing what the other cops can't do. You know, with a combination of his 9mm pistol against all these machine gun wielding terrorists, and you know. But the
premise is that some evil hackers. Shut down everything. And
fire sale means everything goes. In other words, they shut down the power grid, the internet, you know. But it's like...
Communication.
The same week we saw that, there was this news item I saw of McAfee antivirus program, which is not the one I use, but it's like the network edition of that had a bug where it all of a sudden started perceiving a normal file that's in Windows as a virus.
Okay.
And it, like... shut down emergency rooms. It was really weird. It was like
emergency
really?
Rooms and surgical suites.
Yeah, it's like really like.
Well, to me,
that can do that.
Well, the thing is, yeah, there's problems. But like Ronald Reagan said, and you know, for all the problems I have with Reagan, he did say the government's never the solution; it's the problem. And in this case, it might not be the problem, but it's certainly not the solution.
My favorite Reagan quote is the scariest words of the sentence in the English language is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
Exactly.
You know, which was interesting because I looked at him as very the man, you know, like back then. But studying him, he was in favor of smaller government, you know, relative to other presidents.
Relative to other presidents. And more in rhetoric than in practice as well, I would say.
My favorite Reaganism, though, is that government is like a baby's alimentary canal. An insatiable appetite at one end and absolute lack of responsibility at the other.
That is a good one.
Which is completely true.
Yeah.
So, again, I guess we got to get back to the topic of how
what are you going to do about it?
What do we do about it? Well, like,
am
like
I doing this? Am I the producer?
Wrapping it up.
We're going.
I've got. There's actually a one guy that floor directs at the studio at the news station, and when he tells you to wrap it up, he looks like a first base coach. He swings his arms as fast as he can. And throws it like it's a baseball.
Have you seen that Dave Chappelle skit? The fake
wrap it up. Wrap it up. Yeah. Exactly. No, I hate to wrap it up. But to get back to the question, I guess like we should. Like I was saying, the first thing is education, which means we need to preserve the internet. The next thing is, like I said, consent of the governed. If we withdraw our consent from government programs we don't like, and that happens on the state level and the individual level, like the Firearms Freedom Act, I consider that withdrawing your consent. You're saying, no, the federal government does not have the right to tell us what to do with our guns.
But they're going to say, no, you're wrong because we say so.
And well, you know,
someone's going to have to go to prison.
But there's a limit on that. I mean, think about it. There's so many more of us than them. There's so many more.
Yeah, but it's like, who wants, you know, the thing is, like, you have to risk your family and your house. You know, it's like, okay.
And
so
the founding fathers didn't risk everything?
Yeah, but, you know, who's going to do that? It's like,
well, you take your small steps. I mean, you don't outright stop paying taxes, right? But you support whatever is there to reduce the taxes. So you gradually withdraw your consent. And maybe I don't know.
It's the reverse of what the liberals did to get in power now. We assert ourselves through the system to bend it the way we want it.
Maybe that's the other way.
But you know what it is, too? That's difficult because liberals are so feisty. And it's like I don't really want to be that involved in politics.
Yeah.
It's partly because I'm older, but it's partly like, part of my answer to it is Nestlandia. Part of our answer is like, just get out.
Becoming your own sovereign.
Yeah, it's like, you know, in this house right here, everything is legal that should be legal.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's one of the big things. Everybody needs to do that on an individual level, I think.
Yeah, well, it's easier if you don't leave your house, which I don't leave my house a lot, but...
The other thing is,
but you know,
these huge government programs, they can't economically last forever. Social Security's broke, Medicare is broke, the new Obamacare is going to be broke.
Yeah, and they're going to print more money and add a value-added federal tax.
But
and,
as we saw with Weimar Germany, there's a limit to that. There's an economic law. There's a natural limit to how much money you can print.
Yeah, to where a wheelbarrow of money will buy you a loaf of bread.
Right, exactly.
And I don't want to do that.
Well, you're not doing that, but the government is.
I don't want to live under that.
Well, none of us do. So when that happens, we have to have won the intellectual battle at least enough to where people will start realizing, well, maybe real money is the answer.
No, they'll just blame it on Reagan. They will. The liberals will
they,
just blame
they
it
will,
on...
They will, but yeah, we need to be there
will,
to step
but,
in.
Yeah.
You know?
You have to have the other side of the equation.
And if the other side can win, because the liberals did win at some point. The Marxists won at some point, and that's how we've gotten into
the
mess we're in now.
Well, they own the media, too, for the most part.
And they own the media. But people don't really... Especially people my age. Nobody my age watches TV news. Nobody my age reads newspapers.
Jon Stewart.
Yeah, and Jon Stewart's sort of mainstream and liberal, but, you know, only half of the... you know, there's a lot of young people who believe in freedom, and they get most of their news, most of their information from the internet. And on sort of the writer spectrum, you know, you
They're
have...
They're actually thinking of giving bailouts to newspapers.
They are, yeah. And
are they doing it?
The newspapers are certainly calling for it.
Yeah.
I think there's been some local newspapers in some of the smaller states that have received some kind of funds from it. Which is obviously, you can just see the inherent problems in that. I mean, governments are newspapers are statist enough as it is. Imagine if they're actually on the dole. Yeah, exactly. It makes you shudder. So I think we need to be able, cool. And look at how it's opening up. I mean, it's not impossible like we thought it was. There was that Rasmussen poll that gave Ron Paul, 41% of people would have picked Ron Paul and 42% of people would have picked Obama.
Well, the Republican Party needs to run Ron Paul, which they won't for some reason.
Well...
You never know. What if they did?
Well, at this point, he's probably too old. In the next presidential election, not many people are going to vote for... He'll be like, what, 78?
Yeah,
Not many people are going to vote for that.
He is old, but what if he picked a vice president that he could co-sign on? And we just assume, oh, well, once Ron Paul dies, his ideals are going to live on through
Palin?
For the VP. Certainly not Palin. certainly not Palin. I mean, Palin...
Oh, she's not libertarian, but she's got fans.
She's certainly got fans, but I don't really see anything...
I think Judge Napolitano. I really like
Judge Napolitano would be a great... I think that ticket could win. Ron Paul Napolitano... I mean, in Napolitano, you couldn't say he doesn't have experience. He was a federal judge for however many years. And that might be a bad thing for us more libertarian people, but we know his stance, so maybe it's not.
He should be the Supreme Court nominee, but that's a whole other story.
That would be amazing. I mean,
it won't happen.
Of course it won't. I mean, Obama probably hates him, hates his guts with a passion. I mean, Obama's
and it's mutual.
Obama's a guy that thinks the Constitution doesn't go far enough in redistributing wealth. In fact, the Constitution doesn't redistribute wealth at all, and he thinks that's a problem.
I think he's a constitutional lawyer, so he knows how to circumvent it.
Exactly. You know. Right. He knows what he can get away with using the Constitution.
Wrap it up, B.
Wrap it up. So, yeah. Basically, if you believe in freedom, talk about it all the time and don't be wishy-washy. Don't give ground. Understand that freedom is the most important political goal possible. And don't be like, well, in some cases or in this case, freedom is the most important goal possible until you infringe on somebody else's freedom. And if we can win that intellectual battle, I think the rest will take care of itself. Just the way the Marxists won the intellectual battle, you know, in the 1800s. And we're still dealing with Marxist. Everything is basically from this one guy's ideas. All these programs, all these problems were basically legitimized by this one guy. So if you think about the power of that one man's ideas and how they have affected the world to the negative, think about what could happen to ideas that are pro-freedom if we win that battle, to where everybody just thinks of it when they think of things. When they think of class warfare, if people think of the class warfare as being between the parasites and the producers instead of the rich versus the poor. I think once you win that battle, then everything else takes care of itself.
Well said.
Well said. And plan B, own some rifles.
I don't even think that's a plan B. I think that's part of it. Yeah. Just own some in general.
Cool, man.
All right. Good podcast. Yeah.
Good.
Mew. A-mew.
A-mew.
Looking for a reliable, inexpensive web host that gives you tons of server space and tons of throughput?
Then use Host, the web host that
Michael W. Dean and Deborah Jean Dean
use.
Sign up today at host.com. Enter the code SM69 to receive $10 off.
That's SM69.
Host.com, the dreamy, creamy web host.
Hail Nestlandia, Nestlandia rules this room.
Radio Free Nestlandia is copyright 2010. Peep Press, and is available from nestlandia.com.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo podcast. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com.
Anarchy Gumbo is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com, the Liberty Radio Network, and No Agenda Global Radio.
All with a rotating guest on a spit, barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.